Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of September 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Take a look at the cash grain market, too, and what's been happening down on the farm in Windsor, Illinois, with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds. We'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast and look in on the agricultural news as well on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up for a Thursday afternoon. In the corn pit, down 6.25 cents. In the nearby December, it's $3.79¾. The March at $3.91, down 6.25. And the May futures 6 lower at $3.98½. July at $4.03¾, down 5.5. December 5.5 lower at $4.02¾. Soy complex folded just a little bit in the losses with the corn pit. November contract at $8.84½, a little bit by 2¾ cents, that is. January futures at $8.88¾, down 2¼. In the March, down a penny and a quarter at $8.92. May at $8.94¾, a quarter lower. In July, down, or rather unchanged, at $8.98¾. Next year's November, beans at $8.83, down a penny and a quarter. Bean meal futures off $3.10 at $3.1320. The bean oil, down a penny at $26.67. December wheat futures, 6¾ lower, $4.81½ the trade. And settlement price, March at $4.88½, down 6¾. In May at $4.93½, down 7. July futures in the wheat pit for next year down 7¼ at $4.97½, and the hard red July, that's the Kansas City at $5.12¾, down 7¼. Live cattle futures in Chicago, October contract, 62½ cents lower. The last trade at $136.97½. October feeders at $188.17½, trading down 27½ cents at this hour, and lean hogs are $2 lower at $64.07½. In the December contract, that for 100 pounds. Of course, you're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is a broadcasting service of the College of Media right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support for WILL comes from Busey. With more than 145 years of experience, Busey understands the benefits healthy businesses provide the local economy. Proudly partnering with the business community since 1868. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Checking some of the outside markets at this hour, energies are trading crude oil in the October contract at $47.09 a barrel, down 6 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.52¢, that's up 2 tenths of a cent. And the gasoline on the RBOB price, that's the wholesale, at $1.38½ per gallon, up 3 tenths of a cent. Heating oil or diesel fuel, 2¾ cents lower, at $1.53¼. And natural gas for the day at $2.65¼, 0.9 cents lower. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 16,890 is 125 points higher. The dollar is down 0.841 at 94.7. And gold futures for the day at $1,129.25, up $10.25. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Sunny skies, 86. Tonight, a 50% chance of rain. That'll be after 2 a.m. in the morning Central Time. Mostly cloudy and a low of 67 degrees. Tomorrow, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a high of 84. And then tomorrow evening, we'll increase the chance of rainfall to 70%. That'll come after 8 in the evening, mostly cloudy, and a low of 67. Showers and thunderstorms are likely before 8 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. Otherwise, partly sunny and a high of 71 degrees. It will be breezy Saturday with a west-southwest wind at 18 to 22 miles an hour. It'll turn to the north and gust all the way to 29. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker joins us now to take a look at the marketplace and what happened in Chicago and other places. He's in Waco, Texas, and from Zwicker Consulting. Thanks for being with us, Dan. This is the day that everybody turned their eyes towards the Federal Reserve, and Wall Street was thinking about what interest rates might do. Fed decided to do, well, nothing. What'd you think of it?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I've been in the camp for a long time that there was no way the Federal Reserve Board was going to start raising interest rates during the presidential election year. And we have gone so long now with 0% interest rates that I don't think there will ever be a good time to raise interest rates. And, you know, Goldman Sachs came out earlier in the week basically telling Yellen not to raise interest rates, and Goldman Sachs pretty well runs Washington. They got everybody bought off, congressman to the Federal Reserve Board, to the president, to everybody. So I think that was pretty typical, and I think if the market thinks we're going to get a higher interest rate in December, I think they're fooling themselves. Like I mentioned in the early morning recording that we did yesterday, I think there's quantitative easing yet to come, and I think there's even possibly negative interest rates yet to come. I don't believe the Fed's going to raise interest rates until it's too late, very similar to what happened in the 70s, and then once inflation starts galloping, then they can't raise them fast enough, and, you know, you'll go from 0% to 15% in a matter of about 18 months, and then that'll slow down the economy. But I don't see the Fed doing anything until it's too late, because there'll never be a good time, because there will be arguments that if you raise interest rates, you're going to knock down stock prices, you're going to kill 401k nests, and you're going to hurt the pension crisis and everything. So I just don't have a whole lot of faith in the federal government at all, and I guess that's the way it is. And the dollar took a nosedive, which I think for us anyway in agriculture is probably a good thing, because that is going to maybe get us back competitive in a world market that we've become uncompetitive, because Japanese devalued their currency, the Europeans devalued the euro, China's devaluing their yuan. So I guess we might as well get in the game also and devalue the dollar. And I guess we'll see how cheap we can get to the bottom, because that's basically what we're in. We're basically in a trade war through currency devaluations than anything else. I mean, there's other ways to have trade wars, and we've been basically in a trade war for several years, but nobody really wants to admit it.
Were you impressed, turning your attention directly to Chicago and the CME Group, by the ability of the soybeans to hold relatively unchanged, down maybe just a couple of cents in the November contract, in the face of not steep losses, but bigger losses than that, of course, in the corn pit today?
Well, beans have the demand factor going for them. We just have a steady diet of sales being announced, you know, day by day. There's always 120,000 tons here or 120,000 tons there. I thought the weekly export sales that came out today for corn was even actually somewhat good. I mean, it was in the middle of trade ranges. I would have liked to see a little better number, and I think we will see better numbers as we go down the road. Beans have the demand factor going for them more so than corn does at this point in time. And I think we've really got the combine rolling off for bean hedge pressure yet to really set in whereas I do think we're starting to see corn hedge pressure begin to enter the market here with corn combining beginning to pick up across the Corn Belt.
And do you suppose that we will move higher through the harvest season this year or not?
Well, my cyclical work implies that we have a better than 50% chance to do a matter, a 60 or 65% chance, that's about as high as I could probably get it, that we could trend sideways to maybe higher at least maybe during the first half of harvest, maybe once we get into end of October. Then that'll depend upon what kind of crops we're harvesting, I think, in the northern Corn Belt of Minnesota, northern Iowa, and South Dakota, and how much hedge pressure we're going to get out of those areas if those crops are as thick as what some projections are indicating. So the thing that, you know, the softness that we're seeing in the corn market doesn't bother me as a peer technician because we did have a strong advance out of the crop report. We had a bullish reaction to the crop report. We did follow through a little bit there earlier in the week. So I kind of view what we're going through now is more of a corrective move from that strong advance out of the crop report low. Soybeans really have been in a kind of a steady climb, kind of going sideways in here. It's been kind of in a three-week sideways trading range. It looked for a little bit earlier in the week that we might be able to pop above it. It would take some closes above 890 if we could pop above that sideways trading range. Then I think we could maybe get a pop into the 920s. But, you know, September, when you have beautiful harvest weather, it is nearly impossible to get the market to go up in this environment, and that's kind of where we're at in here. So I think it's if we could just close out the week generally steady or slightly lower, especially since we're, you know, all the way, we're halfway through September already. We're going to be in the first, we're going to be in the 20s, September 20th, the last 10 days of September next week. So I think so far the market is performing quite well, given the size of crop that we have out there and the strong tendency of the market to drift lower during the month of September.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you being with us today.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting. He, of course, is in Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, crop payments will total some $6.5 million during a two-day review of USDA by the House Agriculture Committee. USDA officials confirmed payments to crop farmers for the 2014 year are projected at $6.5 million. The payments will largely go to corn producers who signed up for the Agricultural Risk Coverage Program. The payments will be made in October. However, the administrator of the FSA, the Farm Service Agency, says they have yet to determine how much the payments will be cut if sequestration is in effect. The House Ag Committee wrapped up 2 days of testimony on Wednesday, hearing from some 25 USDA leaders. Let's stay with corn state producers, but this time move to Purdue University. They say they've discovered a new corn disease in the Midwest. Purdue University reports a corn disease, previously not found in the United States, was identified in Indiana this week. Samples submitted from an Indiana field were diagnosed at the Purdue plant and pest diagnostic lab. And tar spot fungus was confirmed by USDA. Symptoms of tar spot begin as oval to irregular bleach to brown lesions on leaves in which black spore-producing structures form. In the areas where the disease is commonly found, Mexico and Central and South America, infection is not considered to significantly impact yields, but infections can cause economic damage, according to the university. Infection and disease development occur under cool, humid conditions. Purdue researchers said in the coming weeks they hope to determine how this fungus arrived in Indiana and what, if any, measures need to be taken to prevent future disease outbreaks. We'll stay with economics but turn to the river system in the Midwest. The Mississippi River mayors announced that revenue generated by the Mississippi River is some $405 billion, supporting 1.3 million jobs. That's significantly higher than anticipated. More than two dozen river mayors were in Dubuque, Iowa, attending a three-day meeting for the Mississippi River Cities and Towns Initiative. It is a mayoral-led effort comprised of 68 river mayors committed to creating a coordinated voice for the Mississippi River. The Mississippi is much mightier than even we realized, they say. The river's importance to the region and the nation is indisputable. And they say they must now move forward strategically and purposely to protect the national resource and economic force that is the Mississippi River. Finally today, this little story about history. A special dedication was held yesterday to recognize one of the best-known symbols in agriculture, the iconic DeKalb corn-winged ear logo. Larry Mix is the president of the DeKalb, Illinois Area Agricultural Heritage Association. They're otherwise known as DAHA.
We are dedicating a Illinois State Historical Marker to commemorate the creation of the DeKalb winged ear logo that was created some 80 years ago. We want to recognize what a significant historical development this was. It really was a game changer in terms of how to promote the idea of hybrid corn as a new innovation back in the early 1930s.
Mick says the historic marker demonstrates the mission of the DeKalb Area Agricultural Heritage Association.
DAHA, DeKalb Area Agricultural Heritage Association, was formed back in 2010 as a 501c3 for the purpose of preserving and sharing with the public and hopefully inspiring your next generation about the great legacy of agricultural innovation that came out of Northern Illinois over the last 150 or more years. Been a number of game-changing innovations that have come out of Northern Illinois, and we're trying to help get those stories shared with the public so they, too, can appreciate and hopefully inspire a next generation of innovators to continue the tradition.
In addition to the historical marker, there's a special exhibit commemorating the winged ear logo, which is known around the world.
DAHA has a gallery in downtown DeKalb. In conjunction with the dedication of this marker, we've put together an exhibit called The Winged Ear, Origin and Evolution of a Global Classic. And so this exhibit has just opened up this week, and it's going to be open to the public in downtown DeKalb. We hope that a lot of people can not only see the marker, but also stop by the gallery and learn more about how the winged ear was created and how it has kind of evolved in its design over the years.
If you'd like more information on the DeKalb area and its historical context to agriculture, you can visit www.daaha.org. That's DAHA.org. Stands for DeKalb Area Agricultural Heritage Association. Not only can you visit the area in downtown DeKalb, but I would suggest that you go to Sycamore as well and you visit the Center for Agriculture. It's the Illinois Farm Bureau building in DeKalb County. There is a mural there, a wood carving that must be nearly 20 feet long. It is worth a visit, and there are many other items inside the Illinois Farm Bureau Center for Agriculture in DeKalb County. It's in Sycamore. Two great places to visit if you have not yet to get some historical context about the state of Illinois and agriculture. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're joined now to take a look at the cash grain market and find out what's been happening on the farm in Windsor, Illinois, by Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with me this afternoon. I know earlier in the week you were combining beans. Have you been able to combine many acres?
Yeah, we've actually gotten over about half of our bushels. Or half of our acres. We've been able to make pretty good progress this week with the weather, actually. In the mornings, we've been able to start a little earlier than what we thought we'd been able to and go a little later at night. So we're motoring right through right now.
Now, the yield I saw from you earlier in the week was awfully good. Did it maintain good yields?
Yes, we've been very pleasantly surprised with our bean yields, especially the way that we ended up the growing season, you know, here in the Eastern Corn Belt. I think, you know, my general thought was a lot of our beans maybe ran out a little bit of moisture towards the end, but boy, our bean yields have been awfully good. You know, we probably haven't got any beans under 65 bushels, so we're pretty happy with them.
I would think you might be. And you don't seem to be out of the ordinary for people that are into beans. I haven't heard very many yields that have been too terribly bad for beans. They finished up the season really well. Seems like across the bulk of the part of the Midwest that is already beginning harvest.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of the guys that we've talked to as well are saying that, you know, their bean yields are way better than what they were expecting. I think bean harvest is probably going, it probably got on top of us a lot quicker than what many of us thought it would. And, you know, most of these beans are actually pretty darn dry. I think harvest would be over with on beans a lot quicker than what people thought.
Did you get a look at yesterday's FSA numbers at all for acreage?
Yes, I did. And I, you know, it was interesting to me. I mean, I woke up there yesterday morning, was doing a little bit of work, and saw the acreage come out, and the prevent plant numbers were down. I thought, that's kind of interesting. You know, I didn't think that that was really a possibility. But yet they came out and said that it was, you know, it was wrong. And then upon looking at it, it looks to me, you know, as though when it's all said and done, we could still be looking at a little bit of a cut for both corn and bean acres as far as harvested acres go. So it's going to be really interesting moving forward. I think that they're going to incorporate those numbers in October into the report, so we'll actually know before the typical FSA release, according to the information I've seen.
Yeah, Daryl Good told me yesterday, and this is up on the website now if you want to go listen to it at willag.org, that USDA will actually see another dump from the FSA prior to the October 9th. And that will make that part of the FSA numbers will be actually, I think, released to the public not until the 14th of October. So we won't see it right away. But we still stand as something like 4.5 million acres shy of USDA's numbers for acreage. So it'll be interesting to see whether the FSA and NAS numbers come closer together October 9th or whether more adjustments have to be made in January. And we can't really tell until we get both of those sets of numbers in. So we'll be watching that. You can go, of course, listen to what Daryl has to say about that. Quickly, what do you think about the marketplace for corn?
Well, you know, whenever you look at the corn market, we rallied 31 cents between Friday and Monday. And yeah, it was a welcome sign for the corn market. Of course, we've given, you know, a fair amount of that back, less than half yet, though. And so, you know, moving forward, I think seeing what the Fed did today without not raising interest rates, I think, you know, based upon some of the stuff we're looking at, could be kind of hard on the dollar. It might slide a little bit, which should be good for commodities. And I think there's a lot of things moving forward that would give corn support. I'm not saying we're going to rally right in the thick of harvest, but I do think there's some things to hang their hat on because, you know, I think yield reports have been mixed. We've heard some good, we've heard some bad, and we've heard some ugly. So it's going to be interesting moving forward to see where we come in at.
Thanks so much. That, of course, is Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting back in 2 minutes.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Apple Dumpling Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1677, Stephen Hales was born. An English botanist, he pioneered the quantitative experimental approach in plant and animal physiology. His work showed the importance of air and light in plant growth, and he investigated plant respiration. In 1869, John Elder died. A Scottish marine engineer, he co-developed the compound steam marine engine. His engine divided steam expansions into two cylinders so that each cycled through a smaller range of temperatures and pressures, which improved fuel efficiency. In 1872, the first U.S. patent for an automatic sprinkler system was issued to Philip Pratt. And in 1911, Cal Rogers took off from Long Island, New York on what would be the first U.S. coast-to-coast airplane flight. Along the way, he made 30 stops, including 19 crashes, before reaching Pasadena, California. During the 49 days of the flight, he logged 82 hours in the air. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. It's the 17th day of September. Mike Tenora joins us to discuss the weather forecast. He's at Tenora T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Thanks, Mike, for being with us. Last week, you talked a little bit about El Nino, and I believe the farmers were pretty interested in what you had to say. What more do we know about it and that we should discuss as it relates to the Midwest?
Well, we keep on looking at the El Nino, and we've noticed some interesting features about this one. There's a way you can go back, and the National Weather Service did this, and try to estimate El Ninos of the past. We have pretty detailed records that go back to about 1950, but once you get before 1950, we know there were a lot of El Ninos that occurred, but we did not have a great way to measure them. Well, the National Weather Service has a little system they came up with to try and figure out how strong they were. And here's the interesting thing. They basically were able to date all the way back to 1870 some of the El Ninos of the past. And we know that that was 146 years ago. Well, one thing that we're starting to see is that the El Nino that's developing right now, it looks like it'll be the second strongest in 146 years of record, only surpassed by the 1997-98 El Nino event. So the reason we mention this is just to point out that this is an anomalous El Nino. This isn't your run-of-the-mill scenario that we typically would see. This is a pretty standout event, and we expect to see some of these impacts from it starting over the next 8 to 10 weeks.
And where are the impacts likely to be subjected on the planet?
Well, one of the things that we're also keeping an eye on is just if you look out your window today, you know it's pretty warm out there relative to normal. Now, the temperature departures have been anywhere from 5 to 10 degrees above normal every day since about August 31st across the Corn Belt. The one exception to that was last weekend when it did get fairly cool there for a couple of days. But outside of that period, again, it's been around 5 to 10 degrees warmer than normal. Well, we know that in the most recent strong El Nino events of 1982, 83, and 97, 98, that December, January, and February were all around 5 to 10 degrees warmer than normal. What that tells us is that the type of weather pattern we're seeing right now, at least across the Midwest, is the type of pattern that we would expect to see later on in the winter. Now, it won't be in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. 5 to 10 degrees above normal at that point of the year would be more of highs in the 40s and 50s. But still, that's way above normal, and that'll be the most notable impact, at least in the near term, from the developing El Nino.
Okay, we don't have much time left, but is there any indication that next summer will be dry, for instance, like the 83 summer?
Well, both the springs in 83 and 98 were pretty wet, and they turned a little bit wetter even in the very beginning of the summer. But they both dried out with time, and they both turned hot with time. 1983 had a really bad corn and soybean year, but 1998 wasn't so bad, and that's because the 1998 dryness and heat scenario developed about 3 to 6 weeks later than in 83. So by the time it hit, corn and soybeans were already through their key phases of development.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
Sounds great, Todd. Have a good afternoon.
That is Mike Tenora with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, and wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report.